Obviously, the walking is weird, but the swagger is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Swaggering, but anxious.
Okay.
Like a panther.
Oh.
On his way to a job interview.
What?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 531 for the week of October 7th, 2024. I am Invisible Jack Hammer, David T. Cole, and I'm here with superhero fatigue patient Tara Ariano.
Oh, it's real.
And Captain Cable's Devendra Hardawar.
I can make any cable appear out of thin air. It's great.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. First up, a little pod business. Sarah, you did not hear her name in the intro. It is because she is a Mets fan. She had a chance to go to a postseason game in New York, and I believe she is en route to said game at this very moment while we're taping. You will hear her later in the episode. Sit tight, and she will be back for the Patreon-exclusive episode this Friday, which we will tell you the topic very shortly. And with that out of the way, our guest, he is an editor at Engadget and a co-host on the Filmcast. You've heard him with us many times. It's Devendra Hardawar.
Welcome back, Devendra. Hello. Hey, happy to be here, guys.
We are here to talk about the franchise in which the latest production from Maximum Studios is a superhero epic called Tecto, The Eye of the Storm. And German art house director Eric, Daniel Brühl, is at the helm. He has a lot of very imaginative ideas, most of which just cause more work and more hassle for his first assistant director, Daniel Himesh Patel, who is at a further disadvantage because he actually has read all the comic books Maximum's movies and TV shows are based on. At the same time the viewer is walking into the production in progress, Daniel is very quickly trying to bring DAG, Lale Adefope, the new third AD, up to speed, and her first day happens to coincide with a check-in from Pat, Darren Goldstein, aka the Toy Man, a figure who is feared and reviled by the creative types on set. So Daniel's already having a bad day before he's confronted by the arrival of Anita Ayakash, a producer who is rising faster through the studio ranks than Daniel is, and is also his ex. The show is co-created by Armando Iannucci of Veep, John Brown of countless British comedies, and Sam Mendes of directing multiple James Bond movies. Mendes also directs several episodes here. Only one has aired so far on HBO. We got access to the whole season, but we'll be careful about spoilers. Let's do the Chen check-in. Devendra, should our listeners watch the franchise?
Absolutely. I think it's a lot of fun. I like the characters. It feels like Iannucci, like, back in his rhythm, especially after Avenue 5, which I did not like very much at all. So this is good. It's funny, and I don't hate everybody. That's a start.
Ditto on Avenue 5 for sure. Dave.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a watch. I'm not as enthusiastic as Devendra, but I think it is worth your time.
I've seen the whole season. I reviewed it, which we'll link in the show notes. So I would say, I mean, definitely yes, but I am a Marvel hater. So let's get into it.
Does that help or hinder?
Yeah.
Increases your enjoyment of the franchise or decreases your enjoyment of the franchise?
I think it increased it for sure. Felt it was on my side. So as Marvel drifts into what some consider its flop era, it's an increasingly common target for satire. Devendra, did you feel like the franchise was taking easy pot shots or did the blows land for you?
I think that was my worry going into this is because, yeah, it's a very obvious target. The most popular genre and like franchise around right now. Sure, it's super easy to make fun of it, especially coming from something at Max, which is, you know, part of the whole WB family, and their superhero movies are not doing so well. So at the meta level, it's kind of funny to see something like this coming from Max. I think there are a lot of the obvious jokes, but what works here, are the actors, and the jokes are just like really well written. I think it works well despite hitting a lot of the obvious notes.
Yeah, I felt like maybe this was a project that would have hit a lot harder if it was 5 years ago, six years ago, 7 years ago, maybe. Like, it feels almost, and this is a weird thing to say, but there's like a big difference between whether it's punching up, 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 or just a little bit up from today versus back in the day.
Yeah. It's a little toothless because of that. Yeah.
But yeah, the writing is pretty smart. That Panther clip from the start slayed me. Like, I love that dynamic. That part of it where they're still trying to get a tour talent to come in and lead these things, but they really are not interested in what they're bringing to the table. They just want the name on the poster, and we want the Marvel look, the Marvel everything about it. That part of it still hits really well, I thought. And yeah, everything about Eric in this, I thought was great.
Mm-hmm. I also want to shout out, like, it is very much a Sam Mendes production. Like, this man cannot start a project without a really elaborate one-er, which clearly took weeks and weeks to practice. Like, he just has to show off. He kind of got that thing from the James Bond movies, I guess. Yeah. So it's really impressive. It feels like good, energetic TV with the first episode at the very beginning. It just reminds me of, like, early Sports Night, early West Wing stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say the more famous one-er from his career is 1917.
Right. Sure, like the ultimate one-er. Yeah.
I thought that was good. It was, like, not overly showy, and it was a very fast, like, here are all the million stakeholders on a thing like this that are all going to be coming to this one guy with their complaints that Daniel's job truly is just to shovel shit and, like, keep the lights on and be able to answer why aren't we shooting, because that comes up, like, in every episode.
Right. And the other thing about the show at its base level for me that I enjoy, which I don't think you really get on any quick log line, is that there is a genuine, like, love for the craft that's built into the DNA of the show. Yes, it's all about this movie genre that most people that are in the business think that is kind of killing the business, or at least is, you know, sucking out all the oxygen in the room. But when you get down to how the movie is made and the people that are making it, it actually has a surprising amount of heart for something that Iannucci is touching. I mean, this is not his show, like Thick of It was his show. These are other people that are writing it and running it. But knowing that he's involved, I feel like the characters have a lot more heart than you would expect. And I think it works here. All the characters are pretty unlikable. So when you have a cast of miserable people that are all doing this paychecky job, you really have to nail the jokes. And that's what they did here. The humor isn't as rapid fire as maybe you would get on The Thick of It or Peep Show or other things that people that have worked on this show have done before. But it really is a good formula here. It really works. You can't just have anti-Marvel stuff 24/7 or the show would fall apart right away. And going through everything through the eyes of Daniel, for the most part, really makes it click.
Yeah. Devendra, you're nodding. You agree.
I totally agree. I think Daniel's, like, a really good centerpiece for the show, because he is sort of how I think a lot of people feel too at work. If, like, you are the person, it's either the person you want to be, the person who everyone's going to, or the person you actually are. And, like, you were just, like, burdened by this. Maybe sort of actually like your job too. So I don't know. I'm a big overworker, and I think watching Sports Night at a very young age really fed into that. So I blame you, Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
But no, I think Daniel's a great character. Himesh Patel, I love seeing him in everything, basically, like, especially after Station 11. The cast all around is fantastic. I love seeing Jessica Hines in this. Really wish she had, like, a bigger career, because I loved her in Space.
Yeah.
Good, like, she appears in a lot of British stuff, but she's not everywhere. She's not in, like, major productions. So she's funny. She's just great to see. And Aya Cash, whenever she appears, anybody who's seen You're the Worst knows that she is fantastic. So, like, just great all around. Billy Magnussen, the man of the punchable face, every time he appears, you know, like, I think he also really leans into the sort of, like, you know, airhead Hollywood lead roles type stuff too. So it's great work with this cast.
Yeah, I love the note that he's an actor while everybody is doing their preparations. His preparation is just basically yelling.
Yeah.
And he is always opposite Richard E. Grant as Peter. And that is a dynamic that I really enjoy. My favorite part of the show is the junket interview segments that they do over the credits of the TV show, not the credits of the movie within. And if I had a big knock against the show, I wish I had more of that energy throughout the actual episode, because there's something about that is, like, tickling the player pleasure center. That I wish they infuse more into the actual episode, but I'm glad to have what they tagged on to the end of that. Richard E. Grant is having a lot of fun here, and it's showing in the end product.
So much fun. Peak bitchy mode for him in the show. Like, he's fantastic. Yeah.
And his costume, he plays this character called the Eye, and his helmet's just like this Magneto-esque helmet with just a big giant glass eye in the middle. Man. It's so first thought.
Yeah.
But I guess the other thing And this is, I'm sure, just a matter of budget, but it didn't quite feel like the costuming was quite up to Marvel snuff.
Yes.
And that was like one thing that nobody ever quite get right with superhero parodies. They don't get to the nth level that they do on some of the Marvel stuff. The set stuff looked great. Like the green screen hangar sets and stuff there were in looked great, but the costuming looked really kind of budge, especially Adams.
I wonder how real that is, though, because right now the thing we've learned from Marvel movies is that very few people are actually putting on costumes or putting on masks. Like, that is all CG after the fact, so you don't even see that stuff on set.
I suppose, but like when Adam is walking around in his Tecto thing, there's no markers or anything like that on it, and then they have that one guy who is an extra who just plays whatever creature needs to be played that day, but he is in such a mocap getup that they can't take him out of it, so they put diapers on him. Mm-hmm. And he ends up really enjoying the diapers as like a lifestyle change that he is like happy about. He's just like really loving life.
I don't knock it. I've taken some very long international flights with friends, and they have had to wear diapers for one reason or another, and by the end they're like, don't knock it. You actually have a really nice flight. You don't have to move at all. It's great.
Okay.
And now your slot machine ready.
Exactly. You just keep going.
Yeah, that guy is a thick of it veteran too. I agree about the costumes. That was something I mentioned in my review as well, in the first episode especially. And maybe this is just, I mean, I assume this got bought straight to series and this wasn't just a pilot thing. But when you see the Moss Men, it's like, okay, well, they're just in like ghillie suits from the Army Navy surplus store. Like they... In fact, I've seen better ghillie suits than that. They're very, like, layered. They look really weird. Mm-hmm.
I think part of it, it's a bit of an underdog story, too. Even though it's a big superhero movie, it's like the unloved one of the franchise that nobody really gives a crap about. And
it's Thor, the Dark World of Maximum Studios.
So they really do a good job of selling that. They're not making the biggest tentpole release for this franchise. It's the thing. Everyone's kind of an underdog in this show. Yeah. And that is, it's easy to, you know, appeal to that.
And speaking about all the different movies in the Maximum Cinematic Universe, I really enjoy seeing all the posters sprinkled throughout the episodes in little corners. What was the one that was like the art house film that...
Oh, Eric's previous movie is called The Unlikening.
The Unlikening.
Yeah. But the one that they're in competition with that's also shooting on the same studio is Centurios 2. It's like Enter the Continuum or something like that. It's
very good. Everything is like slightly different. You think you're having a stroke just hearing the names of them. Yeah.
They saw the name Quantumania, right? I think we're all like recovering from just seeing a movie titled Quantumania.
Yes.
We'll never be the same.
So when you see Infinitude on a fake poster, it's like, that is so close to being maybe real. A few years ago, I interviewed Aryan Moayed, who played Stewie on Succession. He also has his own theater company called Waterwell, but this was after he had just been in one of the Spider-Man movies. And I asked like if he was ever on that set and just looked around and thought how much money he could have used in other ways at his theater company. And he was like, yeah. So I obviously thought of that conversation when we hear about the stage that's just full of Japanese cherry trees for a scene that gets cut. And like, you know, that's only the first thing we hear where it's like something gets cut that has to change the entire direction of the production. Like, and then you hear that and you remember, oh, this is how something like The Acolyte gets to be $230 million over budget.
Speaking to that, one of the things I thought was very marvelly and it was a nice touch and must have been so frustrating when it happens, and I'm sure it's based on stuff that's happened in the Marvel timeline, is that the tentpole movie has had a story change that just wipes out a whole race that they've been filming with on this movie, Tecto, like all the Moss Men or the fish people. Fish people have to go away and they've already shot dozens of scenes with the fish people. And just that part of it, like that machine part of filmmaking in the 2020s, that part of it I could use a lot more of.
Yeah.
Marvel as it intersects with the industry rather than nitty gritty of like superhero things. Darren Goldstein as Pat, I thought was a fantastic Kevin for this show.
He specifically feels like a character from Silicon Valley, you know, which is a show that had a lot of like very rich people with weird, like they exist on a different plane of existence than everybody below them. And like, there's a lot of that energy here too. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he's Kevin. I think the Kevin is the Shane that never appears, whose assistant is like his avatar on set being like, Shane thinks it's great. Or, you know, speaking about them both in the same person.
Okay. Most definitely.
Because Pat is the one who's like, I'm the guy that everyone still remembers fucking up my high five with Shane at Comic-Con 2017. It's like, dude.
So he's one level below Kevin then.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
Fahey, is that how you say his last name?
Feige, I think.
Feige. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I will say, Dave, to your point, there is stuff further down the line that intersects more with, like, how do we massage this for the Chinese market?
Right.
Like, what can we do to buy into this? And we see a little bit of that, too, in episode 3 with, like, the woman problem.
Right.
Where Anita has to woman the woman problem with, like, their one character.
Yeah.
that the fans hate. Played by Catherine Waterston, who's so funny.
I guess, going back to earlier when I was saying, like, the one thing, I kind of wish that the heart had more heart and the teeth were sharper. Like, I wish there was more of a disparity between the two modes of the show, or at least the two tones battling each other. Like, people that love the craft, like, Daniel's there. He wants everything to be a meritocracy, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And just the reality of working on a Marvel-esque show where you're just beaten down because it is product. And you are making extruded Marvel product and get at it. It's not there, but looking back on Peep Show or The Thick of It, other shows with this show's DNA, that had more of an edge to it. And I think, like, it would have been a bit stronger if they could have captured that. But it also might be an escalation. We might be getting there. I feel like the episodes as we're going along, you know, one has launched, but we got more. Mm-hmm. And they're a little sharper as you go along.
I don't know how sharp it could be. Right. Like, how sharp could it be? Because this is ultimately a show on Max. You know, it's a WB production, right, basically. Sure. So it's like, you can't make too much fun of the whole superhero movie, machine, because, hey, we are currently doing that. It feels like they're making fun of the Aquaman movies, like, several times, like, directly here, not even Marvel stuff. So I think that's the thing. Like, if this were one of those, like, small British productions that were so sharp and you had to, like, you know, import it or something, like Black Mirror back in the day, like, right. those had more free reign to be dark. That first season of Black Mirror, I remember when, like, I was passing it around with friends being like, why can't American TV be like this?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Or extras even had was able to be more savage than this in the same milieu.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wrap it up with one last, let's say, thinker of the characters that we meet in the pilot. And we've already talked about Anita, Bryson, the assistant to Shane, Adam and Peter, the actors, Rufus, the extra who can't take his fish people makeup, the director, the two ADs, blah, blah, blah. Who has the most thankless job on this production? Is it Daniel or is it actually someone else? I don't know. Devendra, what do you think?
I think it is absolutely Daniel. I think that's part of what makes him a really compelling lead character, because it's just shit being put upon him. Like, at one point later on, there's even, like, a scheduled, you are going to get shit from me because of this session. And I think that is just, like, good. I think, like, the way that is handled and is just, like, accepted by him says a lot about that character and who he is and what he's trying to do. And I also like the way I could see, like, if this series were to progress, I could see somebody like Dag, who is the third AD right now, who's, like, very green, very little, like, she has no influence. But I could see the series getting to a point where it's like, oh, yeah, she's fully running a franchise of her own by the end of this. Like, just there's a lot of interesting commentary they can make about all this stuff and these characters.
I agree with Devendra. It's probably Daniel, but I'll put a word in for Steph, who has to take notes off her boss's, the director's, Aaron's hand as he's jotting things down. And it obviously was not the first time she's had to do this. So,
But she loves it, is the thing. Like, she is fully.
She's like Mr.
Kool-Aid.
Smithers, for
she
sure.
She is like Mr. Smithers. Exactly.
Yeah.
What about you, Tara?
I mean, I think Bryson, who has to, like, pitch his salad as soon as Shane, like, snaps his fingers in another time zone and country. He also feels like he's hero worshiping, but I feel like he's, like, on the line of being able to snap. And there's also more down the line, I'll say, with the VFX people who
are
really under the gun on something like this.
Poor VFX. It's really the VFX people. Yeah.
Hold on.
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
The franchise. Devendra has no idea what's happening right now. Don't worry about it. It's just one of our many stupid traditions. All right, it is time for Around the Dial. First off is Vitar.
Yes. Two of the most ridiculous shows on TV are back, and those are, of course, 911 and 911:Lone Star. I'll start with Lone Star because the fifth season, which just premiered, is the last for the show. I'm also not caught up. But based on what we've seen so far, that's fine. The way they wrote out Grace, one of the show's best characters, the 911 operator, is completely preposterous. We're told she's volunteering on a mercy ship for orphans from developing countries when she has her own child who is a toddler at home. Like, okay. We know she's religious, but good God, no pun intended. So Judd, a.k.a. Glump, her husband, quit the fire department last season to help look after his paralyzed adult son, who until recently was estranged, but now they're back in each other's lives. Or they weren't estranged. Judd didn't know he existed. But now that Wyatt is settled with his wife in a house that Judd fixed up to be ADA compliant, Judd wants to go back to work, but he's too proud to say so, even though Owen, the Rob Lowe character, hasn't been able to decide whether to promote one or the other of the firefighters we know to replace Glump. I honestly don't remember any of the saves in the premiere. The big train derailment that's going to be the multi-episode catastrophe doesn't happen till the end of the premiere. I may return to this one for Around the Dial later in the season. Maybe it goes off. I doubt it.
You remember when it was like Texas-based stuff too? Like it was like the bull semen containers exploding in the premiere?
Of course.
And shit like that. Like what about like some sort of like taco-based catastrophe? Like, let's get it back to the roots, people.
Yeah, I think
one more season to do it. Let's go.
Right. I think when there was a maybe in the volcano one, like a whole bunch of spiders crawl into a food truck, but I might be conflating two different things anyway.
But what about like, let's get a concert like, you know, the big ones they have
ACL.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Currently
and
on.
Get like Philly Wilson up on stage to sing. And then mm-hmm. like terrible things happen to Philly Wilson and the gang and the whole concert.
Mm-hmm.
They set it up in Austin and then they forgot about the Austin part of it. And the early seasons, all the weird Texas shit they were sticking into the first season was great. They've lost that part of it.
We got to end with a catastrophe at the border wall. Like, come on, like just something huge and really sell like that really campy TV sentimentality by the end. Like, we should all learn to live together.
The only thing between us and disaster is that border wall. And then like, and then the credits, right?
That aside, 911 came back with a fucking bee-nado. We've got killer bees completely covering an entire car containing
Did we ever find out why there were killer bees in that truck and not just like bees for honey or something like that?
Besides, they
wanted killer ones, I guess.
Right. Okay. And why so many? Like, if they're on your way to a research lab, you don't need an entire semi full of 2 million killer bees, assume. I'm not a scientist.
I think this is probably the writer's room for these shows are probably having the most fun. In Hollywood right now.
I mean, just I hope so.
Yeah, I love watching these shows with my wife.
Okay, so they're covering a car. Two bee allergic people are in it with one EpiPen. Yep. And then bees start coming through the vents.
Mm-hmm.
There's also in the premiere an assistant at a fragrance launch trapped in a pool because the perfume she was trying out for this party attracts bees who sting her dozens of times. So many they have to use duct tape to like pull all the stingers out in one go. We've got a killer bee transport driver who gets horribly stung and his entire esophagus filled with bees that are still alive inside him while EMTs are working on him.
Don't they end up vacuuming out the bees from his throat?
They sure do.
Sure.
Almost as dramatic as all that is how Brian Thompson, who plays Mean Captain Gerard, looks now. I'm going to pass it to Dave because Dave's been very disturbed by this.
Not disturbed. I was just watching it and I knew this guy, but I couldn't figure out why it wasn't, you know, firing off whatever neurons needed to fire off in my memory.
Yeah.
And then finally, I'm like, okay, if we brickify his body by 60%, I now acknowledge that this is the alien hunter dude from X-Files.
Yeah.
You know, just the guy that just walks around and you punch him happens. And then he stabs somebody with a knife or whatever that thing was. Mm-hmm. Is that
guy? I thought he looked familiar. Wow.
Yeah, it's him.
Amazing.
And now he's, he's older, you know, time marked his on, but he's still built. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to get in a fight with that guy still. He still looks like he could punch a hole right through my head if he wanted to.
Yeah. So I know these special effects heavy episodes at the start and the end of the seasons are just to get you hyped. And then there have to be boring episodes in the middle about how so-and-so passed a test or whatever. And that's
there doesn't need to be, but there are.
There doesn't need to be, but there are. That is a structural problem with the series. I'm not going to look a bee-nado in the mouth, especially after what happened to that one guy. Great, stupid shows. I love them so much. Thank you, 911, for doing what you do. I'm so glad that when Lone Star ends, there's probably going to be another spinoff because we deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
For my plug, what we don't deserve is a revival of Scare Tactics because you may have seen that Jordan Peele is producing it and thought, oh, that probably means it's good. It doesn't. So you can read my review at Cracked explaining why it's sort of meh. And the other thing, as I point out, is like, You know, it's harder and harder to believe a prank show that no one is like, is this for TikTok? Because that's the first thing that I would assume whenever anything weird happened. And granted, I'm sure they can cut that out. But still, I just never believe a mark because I would always assume when some weird shit happens. Like when I get to a weird tasting menu and they're like, this is human flesh. I'd be like, this is where are the hidden cameras? Like, this is not real. But, you know.
Well, the other part of it is that prank culture is not in high regard these days because of TikTok at all. Like, people just don't know where to stop. So I feel like people might have prank fatigue.
It's a bad time for the show to launch. So poor decision, Jordan Peele. What were you thinking?
All right, Devendra, what have you been watching on TV recently?
Yeah, I just finished Interview with the Vampire, the second season from AMC, the AMC series. I just wanted to shout out because I feel like not enough people are watching this. And it's really mainly the TV heads who are talking about it. The first season is on Netflix right now. It's finally out of AMC jail. I don't know what the hell they've been doing with the streaming service, but they've like locked down so many shows.
Yeah.
So I think also Gangs of London, also more widely accessible now, the first season of that. Check out Interview with the Vampire. I loved the second season. I read Anne Rice's stuff in high school, but what I love about the show is that it treats it with like so much gravitas. It treats Anne Rice's work like Shakespeare almost, or another comparison is like what Peter Jackson did to Lord of the Rings, sort of like translating this beloved thing, but in a way that feels really elevated and feels really, I don't know, really masterful. So I love every aspect of the show and I hope more people check it out. It's fantastic. So
You're a Rice head. I don't know what you call these people.
I mean, I read the first couple books, you know, back when I'm a Ricey. I think she is a really talented, you know, writer. I've not read all her stuff, but this really, really does like justice to her work.
It's incredible. No, I love the show. I was one of my faves.
Yeah.
So there's another show coming up in the universe. They got this one. Mm-hmm. They had the Mayfair Witches, and now there's like basically this universe's FBI.
Is that what Talamasca is about? That
yes.
One. Yeah.
Yes.
The Justin Kirk character.
Right.
He is in that organization. So they're like the watchers, I guess.
I'm so excited. Yeah. Like X-Files-y stuff in this universe. I mean, just the idea of it. Also, I like that actor, too. So when he popped up, it's like, oh, you're doing something with this society here. So, yeah, it's fantastic.
Mayfair Witches didn't grab me, but I always love the idea of the human organization watching the monsters. It's always has the potential to be really good fun.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Devendra, you are all over the internet and our headphones, so let the people know where they can find you.
Sure. I mean, I want to shout out the latest episode of the Filmcast. We talked about Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis.
Did you love it?
I have a lot of feelings about that movie. Love is not one of them, but it is interesting. It is certainly, it is a really interesting thing to talk about, which is we spent that entire episode just trying to deconstruct what the hell happened in that movie. But I wasn't bored. I'll say that.
So that movie bombed big time, right? Mm-hmm. Like box office wise. So do you think now franchise, like they're going to try to get Coppola to do a superhero movie and he will do it because he will need the money because he put his own money into this movie?
I don't know if he needs the money. I think this is his sort of like last hurrah. Here, cinema, here, society. This is what I think about the world. Do with it what you will. He doesn't need to. He's not, you know, like a Ridley Scott or anything. He's not, he doesn't have the drive to keep producing stuff. So yeah, I don't think he's going to do that.
Well, good. Dodge a bullet there. All right, here's what's coming up on our extra, extra hot, great supplemental podcast this Friday. We're going to be talking about Roller Jam, which is sounds like America's best dance crew, but on roller skates.
That is, based on what I've seen so far, that is accurate.
I am here. So who will be the Jabberwockies of that show?
My God. I can't wait to find out. For our listeners who don't know, I and past guest Adam Sternberg many years ago traveled to Las Vegas on purpose just to go and see Jabberwockies perform at the Monte Carlo, as I recall. And it was a blast. It was a great time. I cried. It was so good. That's not a lie. That is the truth. And I'll also say on Extra Extra Hot Great note, we talked about Interview with the Vampire season 2 earlier this spring. So we'll link to that in the show notes, too. If you are new to the Patreon, you can hear our discussion of that.
All right. That is available to club members. Go to extrahotgrate.com/club to learn and sign up and then come back here next week for EHG Prime. We welcome back Alan Sepinwall, and we're going to talk about Disclaimer. Mm-hmm. It is time for the extra hot, great canon. Even though Sarah D. Bunting is playing hooky, she did take the time out to record her canon presentation. So here we go. Take it away, Sarah.
Oh, hi. It's me, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm here to pitch Frasier Season 5, Episode 14, The Ski Lodge, for the Extra Hot Great Canon. This is one of those if-you-know-you-know episodes that's tough to pitch for two reasons. First, a lot of the humor is in the form of looks exchanged, rubbery faces of horror, eyebrow wiggles, etc., and in this legendarily visual medium, well, you see what I'm saying. Second, its success relies in no small part on how well the viewers know the characters, and how well the viewers know the show knows the characters. So a canon hopeful has two choices here. Write a master's thesis on the structural elements of bedroom farce in turn of the millennium filmed media, or hike a thumb at the episode all, am I right, and hope the panel's discussion bails me out. And nobody wants that first thing, your correspondent included, so I'll try to keep it brief. The basic plot here is that Roz, Perry Gilpin, has won a fancy ski weekend, which Frasier, Kelsey Grammer, gaslights her into trading to him for a big screen TV, smart lady. Frasier then invites Niles, David Hyde Pierce, mired at this point in his divorce from Maris, as well as their dad Martin, John Mahoney, himself bogged down with a head cold that's stopping up his ears and catalyzing the plot, clip one.
When we were courting, I sent Maris a valentine that said, "You're the girl my heart adores. Everything I have is yours." Now they're calling it a prenup.
It's terrible. Can you imagine using that as a weapon? An old valentine.
I'd love a cold valentine.
Niles naturally invites Daphne, Jane Leaves, who brings along her swimsuit model friend Annie, Cynthia LaMontagne, who's in town for her birthday. By the time this clown car gets to the lodge, Frasier is hot for Annie. Annie is hot for Niles. Niles is Niles, so he's hot for Daphne. And then the French ski instructor Guy, James Patrick Stewart, shows up to also be hot for Niles, as well as to misunderstand game of telephone information about Niles that Martin and his clogged ear canals misheard via Daphne, whom Guy assumes is capital D doing it with Annie. Martin just wants to get everyone wrecked on hot buttered rum and remember aloud how he used it to work up the courage to ask the doctor's Crane's late mother to marry him. Everyone else in the house interprets Martin's reminiscences as an instruction to carpe diem, sexfully. And because nobody exactly knows whose bedroom is where, a bunch of shrieking, door slamming, and premature champagne elation ensue. Let's hear just a part of that in clip two.
Dr. Crane!
Daphne! Frasier! I'm sorry, wrong room!
Just get out of here right now!
All right, well, so it's this room I walked in?
Oh, just fine. Go!
Yes, bye-bye, sorry again.
Bonsoir.
Guy,
you are not the Crane I want.
You're not even the sex I want.
Where is Niles?
Oh, Niles. Company.
Oh, my God. What are you doing in here with Guy?
Don't be jealous, Niles. It's not how it looks.
Oh. You know, as much as I'd like to stay and help you two sort this thing out, there happens to be a very beautiful woman on the other side of this door who wants me desperately. Annie!
Ah! Sorry
that clip was long. It's like half the length of what I originally clipped, and it's still hard to convey the full effect, but I think the episode works at a canon-worthy level, and here is why. One. Very careful setup. Martin's just compromised enough to wreak havoc hearing is established early and reestablished at key points along the way, but with a light touch. The camera work shares that light touch and makes sure we see various longing looks or characters registering information, but doesn't linger too long. The actors play it big, but not non-credibly big. And the writing, of course, is made to look comparatively effortless, but when you're close reading an episode for a canon pitch, you see better what a script is or isn't doing. The Ski Lodge's script has ensured that the miscommunications and the reactions to them downstream are believable, and that it never devolves into what the late Roger Ebert would have dismissed as an idiot plot. Reason number two, the trust in the process. The show had already pulled off the legendary ham radio episode in its previous season, and it too is in the Extra Hot Great Canon. The Frasier team absolutely already knew how to do this, and part of that is not doing too much. The Ski Lodge has all the ingredients. Sometimes the real trick is to just measure everything right, throw it on the stove, and let it cook, and boy does it. Not to overdo the kitchen symbology here, but both Cheers and Frasier were excellent at classic sitcom fare, dishes prepared carefully and well. The Ski Lodge is a perfect example of that, and I hope you'll find it appetizing enough to vote into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Thank you, Sarah. Devendra, you chose this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
I adore this episode. I'm a huge Frasier fan. My wife and I, we have probably gone through the entirety of Frasier hundreds of times. Frasier is our, like, it's our nighttime show, the soothing show that gets everybody to sleep. It's mainly the dulcet tones of Kelsey Grammer that does it for us, I think. But I love the construction of this episode. If you were to like show space aliens what a sitcom is, what is a situational comedy? It is this episode of a show where the audience knows the characters, like Sarah said. The writers have a good sense of who these people are and their relationships to each other. Then you bring in new people. You add a few like impairments to existing characters, like, and you just kind of stir it all up and put them in a single location, and hilarity ensues. And I think this is just such a prime example of what I love about sitcoms. A lot of it is very visual too. Like, I don't know why the Ski Lodge, why are all the rooms interconnected?
I wondered that.
Multiple doors. A lot of things that don't make sense, but I think the misunderstandings are all really funny. You get a good dose of Kelsey Grammer chest hair. And when you get that, like, that's a good sign for the night. Like, just sexy Kelsey Grammer. At one point he says, I should register this dressing gown with the love police. And I agree, Kelsey Grammer. I agree. Like, it just really works. It's all the like miscommunications and everything, the entire setup that I think just really makes this episode work. He has a great, like, great line at the end, like all the love coursing through the night, everything ricocheting off the walls, and no one was chasing me. It's so good. And then the cherry on top is like the credits where it's like another Frasier misses again. Once again, his vanity is fully on display, but also his like his own bumbling, you know, with romantic things is here too. I love it. I think this is a fantastic episode.
Yeah. To be clear, there's the closing tag is Annie gets the champagne, is on her way to Frasier's room, but then he's already in the kitchen getting a snack. So he misses her.
She leaves and then he comes out like the second later. Amazing.
Yes. It's the last door slam of a door slamming farce episode. Yeah, this episode it's rated 9.5 out of 10 from IMDb users, and they're not always right, but they're right about this. This is definitely a god tier episode for all the reasons Sarah said. The airtightness, and I've now seen this episode many times, like it's so structurally sound, like she said. There's not a wasted second, including bringing in James Patrick Stewart as Guy. I think Cynthia Lamontagne is fine. Her Manchester accent comes and goes. I would say it's not the best. It's very like broad, but that sort of fits an episode like this too. That's obviously like supposed to be, you know, farcical. But James Patrick Stewart just slides into this ensemble in a way that has to have been hard for guest stars. And I cut an extra clip. So Dave, please play that.
Just between us, my interests lie elsewhere this weekend.
Really?
Just the mustard on that one word. It's so good. Man. He has another really funny moment where he's building a fire and Daphne says something like, is there anything you don't do? And he, big wide eyes, like, there are a few things. So he's really funny. Yeah.
Just his introduction, by the way. I am Guy.
Yeah.
I am Guy. That's it. Three words.
Yeah, he's great. It's fantastic. The relationships among all of them are perfect. The way it's credible that everyone has the misapprehensions that they do, the episode wouldn't work if it didn't. And that's like tight writing, but also excellent performance, great editing, like just firing on all cylinders. This is what you can do with a multicam show. This is like, you know, I don't think we miss them overall, but there's some aspects of them that like, It just wouldn't be the same if it wasn't happening live and if you couldn't hear the audience. Like, we've talked about this before with Canon submissions with multicam shows. Like, this is what they should be doing, basically. And if you're not, I don't know why you're a multicam. Dave.
Yeah, it is a really strong episode. I'm putting it like slightly below Ham Radio for this type of episode, but like just so slightly. Like, Ham Radio had a chaos that I enjoyed a little bit more than this one. That's not a knock on this episode at all. My only knock, I would say, is that the story takes a little too long to get to the ski lodge. Like, they have to set up Marty's plugged ear before they get to the lodge, but otherwise they could have probably got there a few beats earlier. Beyond that, it really is a really strong episode that you could totally see being done at like a local theater somewhere, right? Because once you get to the ski lodge, it's basically one set if they just took away the walls to the rooms and let you see the interiors as if the walls were really there. And then the whole thing could have been done on a stage and has that sort of vaudevillian tradition to it, where, or Looney Tunes tradition, where they're going passing between things. Actually, Three's Company tradition too. It feels very much like a Three's Company episode, full of misunderstandings about who likes who and who's gay and who's not and all that kind of stuff. A few very Frasier moments when they finally get to the ski lodge and they're recapping Frasier's terrible driving, which was there so that people would slam into each other boobily. I leave it to you to put the pig back in Pygmalion was a very Frasier line. The other part that nobody's mentioned that I wanted to highlight is right at the climax of everybody figuring out that everybody is liking the wrong person and then nothing is matching up. Marty gets into the room, his ears are unclogged. He kind of figures out what's going on. Oh, my ears are unclogged. I'm so happy. And he looks around and he has this moment, which is very much the same as Homer going back into the hedges. Where he kind of like backs out of the room, which was very funny.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. Good night.
Yeah. Good night. Type of episode that Frasier excels at and Cheers before it. But they really just know how to write a tight, tight comedy like this. And it really shows that they, as Devinter was saying and Sarah said, know the characters and you know the characters and they're playing it to everybody's strength. And you get something that is like pretty much flawless. And once you get to the ski lodge, is like bang, 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 bang. And it just doesn't stop until it ends. So yeah, great choice. Great episode. Let's put this to the official vote. Devinter, what do you say? The ski lodge, canon worthy or not?
Absolutely.
And Tara.
Sarah added this to our doc as an option when it was already on my to canon list. So thank you, Sarah, for doing it. And absolutely, yes, no question.
Me too. So that means Frasier and I Ought to Know, I'm Frasier, Season 5, Episode 14, The Ski Lodge. You are hereby inducted into the extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time to discover who is the winner and a loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I surely do. And that winner is, I mean, it's a question mark who the winner is, but Rugrats, the long-running animated show, is getting a live-action movie adaptation with CGI babies, which sounds absolutely horrifying.
Okay, so... the human parents will just be like whoever, you know, you're going to get your Catherine O'Hares or whatever to play them. And then the babies are going to be like CGI babies, but are they going to be like rug ratified by like 20%? So like their heads are like not quite human, but everybody else is human.
They're, I mean, and in animated form, like they're kind of horrifying looking, like work in the show because they all look like that.
They all look like humans that used to be other things and they were dipped into batter and now they're living beings.
Yes. Right. And this is going to be written by two Saturday Night Live writers, Mikey Day, who's also an actor on the show, and the current head writer, Streeter Seidel, wrote the script together. And I guess, like, fine, you know, this is like a show from their youth, probably. Mm-hmm. But are they going to bring, like, an SNL sensibility to it? Like, is this going to be for kids? Is it going to be for people their age? Like, everything about this, I hate it. But congratulations to everyone involved for selling a project, I guess.
Well, it's like people that didn't grow up with Scooby-Doo but love the Scooby-Doo movies.
Sure.
Like, it could be like that, where it's just sort of like it has a sensibility that just connects. You don't necessarily have to have grown up with it.
Right.
Not that anybody that's grown up with Scooby-Doo is really clamoring for a lot more Scooby-Doo in their lives.
No.
But it could be like that, maybe.
It could. I don't know. I guess
we'll see. Best case scenario, maybe.
I guess we'll see.
All right.
I mean, I won't. I'm never watching this movie.
I don't know anything about Rugrats is exactly in the sour zone for me as far as something I would have watched. Devendra, Rugrats?
I was raised on Rugrats pretty much. Like I was definitely older by the point, but I was watching it with my younger brother, and it is a well-written, really well-animated, really creative show. Like I believe Brad Bird worked on it a bit too. The Anne Flux creator did some animation. So like a lot of talent was in that show. I don't know what the hell is going to happen with this movie though.
Are you excited?
No, nobody wants to see
it. Are you scared?
I am absolutely scared that there will be CG mutant babies on our screens sometime soon.
Are you more scared by this movie or more excited by Kelsey Grammer's chest hair?
I mean, listen, Kelsey Grammer's chest hair. That's a
good answer. Good answer.
Good answer.
All right. Loser of the week is Peacemaker. Speaking about comic book stuff, which will never get Joel Kinnaman to reprise his role as Rick Flagg Jr. Oh, no. What a shame. He was interviewed recently. This is quote, "I don't know what to say. That's ridiculous," Kinnaman jokingly told Screen Rant about returning to the DC universe. I would never be on a show like that. It's not what I do. It's not what I do. What?
Joel.
I'm sorry you're mad at me, but this isn't personal. This is business.
Business, eh? Well, let me tell you something. You just lost yourself a customer.
What? I'm sorry.
Joel.
Couldn't hear you.
I said you just lost yourself a customer.
What?
You just lost yourself a customer.
You're going to have to speak up.
You just lost yourself a customer.
Warner Bros.
I forced myself to what?
You just lost yourself a customer.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
You just lost yourself a customer.
Yeah, you can use it.
Well played. Well played. I will say, though, hashtag justice for Rick Flagg. Come
on. Okay. Come on. I'll take your word for it.
I love Peacemaker, but I don't know what the hell was going on in that show at all.
Well, speaking for superheroes who deserve justice, or do they? Mm. Do you know what time it is?
Is it non-regulation game time?
It sure is, Dave. Since Sarah is not joining us, and this was going to be non-regulation game time regardless, I offered Dave the chance to play a game this week, and he said yes, and therefore that's happening. So Dave, if you get mad at this game, remember, it's your fault. Inspired by our lead topic, I'm giving you both a quiz about superheroes from TV who are probably never going to be in a Marvel or DC movie, barring some kind of Deadpool and Wolverine mega crossover situation. So I'm going to give you the name of a superhero or supervillain from TV. You tell me what show they're from for 2 points. Could be a show about superheroes, might be a superhero or quasi-superhero character that gets a significant mention or appearance in a non-genre show. There is one case where you will get the superhero's alter ego because their superhero name is the title of the show. If you need a hint, I'll give you the name of an actor from the show. I'll give you the person who plays the character in question. If I personally thought that would be helpful, but these are a lot of genre shows, it might be someone you have no idea who that is, in which case I'll give you the name of someone from the cast that I've heard of, and I will let you know if that's the case. So after the hint, it's worth 1 point. You can guess for free at each level. The stakes, the loser has to buy the winner a superhero-themed gift valued at a maximum of $5 for the five Avengers, because I do not acknowledge Hawkeye.
Defender, are you okay with wagering?
I'm totally
I already
fine.
Checked.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I can. I don't gamble much, but I can go with $5.
Shirtless poster of Kelsey Grammer, $5?
Please.
Question mark?
Please.
Do you have any questions?
Nope.
We have 20 questions and a tiebreaker. No show is in here more than once. Let's throw it to Picky to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, Devinder, you are on the odds. Dave, you're evens. Mm-hmm. Are you ready to play Less Sung Heroes?
Yes, ma'am.
Sure.
Question number one is for Devendra. Your superhero is Leonardo.
Ninja Turtles?
That is correct.
Okay. I guess he's a superhero.
Which Ninja Turtle specifically?
Yeah, which one?
The cool one.
Cool ones. I'll let you have that.
How old are they and what is their DNA status?
Yeah.
All right. 2 points for Devendra.
2 points for Devendra. Dave. Awesome X.
Awesome X is a superhero from the television show Frisky Dingo.
That is correct for 2 points. Back to Devendra, your superhero is Tecto.
Oh, come on.
Tecto. I said the easy ones are up top, Dave.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The franchise. As
that is correct for 2 points.
Yeah. How bad would it be if he got that wrong?
It would be pretty bad.
But would it be like, you know, embarrassing bad or visit to the doctor bad?
I had to think about it, to be honest. Yeah.
There's only been one episode, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
All right, back to Dave. Bubbles.
Bubbles is a Powerpuff Girl.
Correct. Devendra, Rita Repulsa.
Power Rangers.
That's correct. Dave, Wolf Girl.
I just want to say before we get into Wolf Girl, that was a non-generational answer I could have gotten right. I just want to put that out there for the record. I knew the Power Rangers question.
Okay, great.
Only because I think Elizabeth Banks played her in some movie or something like that.
Yes.
And I saw the name connected with her. And I'm like, she's not repulsive.
No.
At all. Wolf Neither Girl, you say?
Wolf Girl.
Wolf Girl feels like it's from something recent, like one of those 10,000 hero things. Maybe Invincible? Was there a Wolf Girl in that? No, it was a Monster Girl in that one. Wolf Girl. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't think I know this off the top of my head, so I will take a clue.
Okay, your clue is Jean Smart. Jean Smart does not play Wolf Girl.
Oh.
Hmm.
Jean Smart doesn't play Wolf Girl, but Jean Smart is in the show.
Correct.
Watchmen?
Good guess.
Hax, that's the character played by Hannah Einbinder's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
With the ring.
Damn, okay.
She thinks it's an engagement.
Yeah.
Back to Devendra, Siler.
Heroes.
Good for 2 points. Back to Dave.
Yes.
Little Cricket.
Little Cricket. Isn't that the gun from Men in Black?
That's not a TV show.
It is a TV show. There's a cartoon. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's not a superhero.
It's not a superhero.
Little Cricket. A superhero. Are these all genuine superheroes? Not like, you know, they think they're a superhero kind of thing?
I mean, this. When you hear the answer, you'll be like, okay, that person has superheroic powers.
Okay. I don't know this. I'll need a clue, please.
Do you want it? Your hint is Clancy Brown, and Clancy Brown does not play Little Cricket, but Clancy Brown is in the show Little Cricket's
in.
This
is Gen V?
Yes. It's the Lizzie Broadway character who can shrink, grow big and shrink down.
Oh, that's Little Cricket?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Back to Devendra, Clown.
Not all heroes wear capes.
It's so many. It's so many things.
It's just Clown.
Just Clown. Mm-hmm. Just Clown. Can I have a hint?
Yes, you can have a hint, and your hint is Keith David. Keith David does not play Clown.
Ah, yes, Spawn.
Spawn is correct for 1 point. Back to Dave, and then we're going to have a score break. Dave, The Tuxedo.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this one is a little conceptual.
My brain just went to the Jackie Chan movie for some reason.
Yeah, same.
And I know there's a Tuxedo something in Sailor Moon, but I don't think he's a superhero. I think he's just a magical dude.
Tuxedo mask.
Oh my God, Devendra, I thought you were having a big glass of milk for a second.
Oh no. This is a sippy cup.
Strongest bones in the business.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I'll take the hint, please.
Your hint is Alec Baldwin.
The Tuxedo. Alec Baldwin. Is this 30 Rock?
Yes. Okay. It's the one where he turns into the tuxedo and then Liz is the Joker on the subway with the stinky eggs. Okay.
Right.
Let's have a score break, Div.
All right. Not going well for yours truly. Devendra is knocking out of the park with 9 points to my six.
That's still pretty close. I have a good feeling about the rest of the game. Let's get back into it. Devendra, your superhero character is Nitromancer.
What? Can I have a hint, please?
Your hint is Ryan Hansen.
Okay. Veronica Mars? Oh, I know. Okay.
What is it?
Party Down, probably.
It's Party Down. That's the character he's going to play until he gets canceled.
Yes.
Back to Dave.
All right, I need this bad to catch up, Fish.
Your character is Super King.
Oh, Super King is from Futurama.
That's correct. I really went back and forth among the three superheroes from that episode, whether it be Clobberella, Super King, or Captain Yesterday, but I feel like I made the right choice. Okay, back to Devendra. Rex Splode.
Love a hint for this one.
Your hint is Jason Mantzoukas.
The League?
Is this Invincible?
That is Invincible.
That would be Invincible, yeah.
Okay, for Dave, Ralph Hinkley.
Oh,
my brain. Oh, I know that name. Why do I know that name? Ralph Hinkley.
Is this Greatest American Hero?
Yes.
Wow.
Never had a superhero name. I looked it up. There's like he's referred like with fake superhero names, but like none of them really sticks.
Like okay. The ones the press give him because they don't know that kind of deal.
Yeah.
Okay, Devendra, Heat Blast.
This could be anything. I would. Can I have a hint for this one too, please?
The most well-known person that I saw in the cast list.
Oh, this is going well for you, Devendra.
Tara Strong.
But she voices everything, though.
Tara Strong does not play Heat Blast.
She is in everything. Okay. One of the X-Men shows? No.
Ben 10.
That's a kid. That's way beyond me.
Okay, yeah. I don't know how young you are.
Yeah.
Take it as a compliment.
I just hit 40. I'm on the 40s now. Yeah.
Okay, back to Dave.
Yep.
Your character is Night Nurse.
Night Nurse.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing I know about Night Nurse. I think DC and Marvel both have characters called Night Nurse. But I think it's probably a Marvel thing, but maybe not. So who would be Night Nurse? Is Night Nurse... you don't have to answer this, but I think there's multiple answers to this question.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and I'm trying to think of one of them. Just let me go through my process, woman.
Okay. I was going to try and help you, but I guess I won't.
I don't want your help.
I do, but no, I've been too deep.
I'm trying to remember what the hell show. Just give me a sec.
These shows don't exist.
I think the character was in all the Street Team Marvel shows, but now I don't know if I'm misremembering that. Oh, fuck it. They're in a diner, they're talking to somebody else, and I'm trying to remember who the fuck the Punisher is one of them.
The one I was looking for was the one that was in Dead Boy Detectives.
Okay, but Night Nurse is, that's the same. Oh, yeah. See, that's DC, but Night Nurse is the
Rosario Dawson character.
Yeah, Rosario Dawson character from all the Marvel all the other ones too. So you just played yourself, Arianna.
Okay, then I have to give it to you. That's legit.
I actually, now having said Punisher, I'm not entirely sure she was in the Punisher.
She's definitely in Luke Cage
and
Daredevil at certain points. But I was thinking like, you were forgetting them just like Netflix forgot about these shows. You know, don't exist in Netflix anymore.
I did try to avoid anything that said it was Marvel or DC. And this was like Vertigo Comics or whatever the fuck. No, she was not in Punisher.
Burn so close.
Yeah,
so close.
I just picked one at random. Everybody wins there. Tara wins. She was right. I was wrong.
Okay. Devendra, The Corinthian.
Speaking about Vertigo comic.
Oh, yes. Constantine?
It's the Sandman.
Yeah.
The guy with the teeth eyes.
Ugh. Horrible Boyd Holbrook.
He was good casting for that, though.
Yeah.
I can't believe that's coming back.
I can't believe it's coming back now. I can't believe they're not just going to just bury it and hope nobody knows.
Yeah. Dave, Johnny Domino.
Johnny Domino. All right. One second here. I have to go looking through other things for no apparent reason. And the thing.
Time.
Is this Johnny Domino?
Mm-hmm.
The saxophone playing superhero?
Yes.
From Nightman?
He sure is, Dave.
Woo.
Let's hear the scores before you each get your final question.
All right, well, the scores have changed quite a bit. Quite a bit from our last score break. Devendra at 9. And I think I gave myself 2 points for Punisher before I figured it wasn't. Although I'm not sure now, so I'm just going to say I got 12 and play it safe.
Sure.
Okay.
12 to 9.
Let's finish strong, Devendra. Batmanuel.
Yep. Batmanuel.
Is this the last question?
It's Devendra's last question.
Venture Brothers.
Can I offer a pre-clue?
Sure, go ahead.
Spoon.
That does not help me at all.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're not going to get it.
Yeah. But I was saying Venture Brothers.
The answer is what, Dave?
The Tick.
It is from The Tick.
Oh, yes.
Played by Nestor Carbonell.
Yes.
Spoon.
Old eyeliner face himself. Finally, for Dave, Black Noir.
Black Noir is from The Boys.
Nice.
That's correct. What are our final scores, Dave?
All right, let's do the final tally. Deventer ends with 9. I end with 14 points.
That sounds about right.
Woo!
Nola for Mantis in this game. Wow.
Just for fun, I'm going to say this tiebreaker, and you can just yell it out for glory.
Okay.
Radioactive Man.
Simpsons.
That's right, Dave. You got it.
All right, well done. Thank you, Tara.
Good job, everybody.
Dave.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We battled with the Marvel send-up, the franchise, before going around the dial with stops at 911, 911 Lone Star, and 911 Vampire. Sarah got Fraser's ski lodge down the double diamond trail that is the ESG canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And David T. Cole was the winner of this week's Game Time from Tara. Next up is Roller Jam on Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Waterfall,
the absent Sarah D. Bunting, and Devendra Hardawar,
superhero fatigue is real. I have it.
It's not a scam. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Excuse me a second. Could you shut the fuck up?
Are you kidding? My God, so happy to shut up.
Appreciate it.